Oh, now you do after it blanks out on me.
The following presentation.
Oh, it's always his fault.
It is.
It's always the phone.
It is not intended for children.
It's
not.
It's never you.
It's never me. Ever.
This project is extremely dangerous.
Those
because I blew it out of the goddamn airlock.
You're listening to the Guardians of the Geekery podcast, featuring Matt Starnslord,
howdy.
Carol the Cat,
hello.
The Giddy Geeker,
aloha.
And Tiffany the Technician.
Hello.
People assume that time is a strict progression of course.
Stop copying me, Chippy.
From a non-linear, non-subjective viewpoint, it's more like a big ball.
And now, damn right they shot first.
I want to be just
the
like,
hosts
I wanna
of
be
Guardians of the
Alright, episode 134.
Oh my gosh.
Kyle, how was the garage? Did you have fun with Field and the sponges?
I'm glad there were the new sponges.
He needed them, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. The old ones are not fun to wring out for water. They're just not after a couple months.
He tries to saute them like tofu and we just don't agree.
Why, oh why?
So we're here with J. Kyle McNeil,
yes,
author of Birthrights, coming out now, available now for pre-order on Amazon. A sci-fi fantasy
epic fantasy
novel. Yes. So.
Two protagonists. That's awesome.
And if you want to know more about it, you should go back and listen to episode 133. But you could find him everywhere on the J. Kyle McNeil train. So J. Kyle McNeil, Kyle spelled K-Y-L-E. The letter J is J. Kyle McNeil. And McNeil is spelled M-C-N-E-A-L.
Uh-huh.
If you can't find that because I did it in a weird order, let me just say J-K-Y-L-E-M-C-N-E-A-L. On the Twitter and the Facebook, and probably if you search for that with spaces in between, you could find them on the Amazon, too.
Or send a self-addressed stamp envelope, too.
Buffalo, Colorado.
You could send complaints about our
two tiffles.
To tiffles at guardiansofthegeekery.com. We're not spelling that one for you.
She can tell you where to stick your...
That's right.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, because we wouldn't care if you were the last man on Earth.
Dun, dun, dun.
Launching right into our TV show.
That was lovely. So Last Man on Earth, it came back after its long winter break. It was, I think, December the last time one of these episodes was on. So this showed yet another person who is not the last man on Earth, but it was Kristen Wiig.
So,
and it showed her arc, and they do this when they introduce a new character sometimes. They'll have an episode that's just that person to see how. But this was really interesting because it showed, for the first time, the beginning of the virus that wiped out most of humanity. And it was funny. So it was...
It's a comedy.
It went through, and it showed, like, someone coughing, a little bit of blood, and then you hear news reports, and they're like, oh, no. And Kristen Wiig's character is very rich, and she's like, oh, that won't happen to us. And then... all of a sudden, like, her servants all die, so she's alone, and she realizes this is bad. But she's watching TV. She goes to this bunker, and she's watching TV, and you see, first, it is Trump who dies, and it has the royal parade because the president has died, and then it just goes down, it's Pence, and it goes down the whole administration.
Oh my gosh.
It was really kind of I was not expecting that. They haven't done anything, like, any kind of political commentary at all, so I guess that was their way of kind of... They've had the time after the elections, I guess. So,
did
I think
Trump
I know where they stand. So,
yeah. Did Trump tweet anything about it?
No.
I guess he hasn't watched.
Well,
the
I guess he doesn't watch
yet.
Fox. I don't know. He should.
Well, he watches,
watches
Fox
the
news.
Yeah.
I wonder, with all those people dying, who the designated survivor might be.
Well, yet another alternative take on the president. This is Kiefer Sutherland, also back from a long winter break, as President Kirkman. And for those of you who haven't watched it, it was basically, there's a State of the Union, and there's a huge bomb that goes off, and the designated survivor is a person that they pull out in case something like this were to happen. So he was head of HUD, and he becomes president.
Oh, wow.
And that's the whole premise of his cabinet. But so he's built up Congress again, and then he finally finds a vice president who has this controversy going on in the background. And so he goes in to swear the vice president in this outdoor ceremony, and he gets shot. And
He can freaking live.
Yeah.
In this
so,
show.
But he lives. So Kiefer lives, but then he finds out that the person he just that just is now vice president is kind of the Manchurian candidate that's been placed there. So very interesting. A lot of different levels, and it is a lot different than 24. So Kiefer Sutherland had said recently he didn't want to go back to TV at all, but he read the script and he was kind of hooked. And he said, "Okay, this is different. I thought it was just going to be another 24 or something like this."
He looked at his bills and realized I kind of have to.
Yeah. So if we want to see like an alternate history of presidents, this is kind of a cool way to go. So it's a little bit West Wing. It's a little bit Taken. I don't know. Just kidding. Country and rock and roll.
Because those two things go so well together.
They really do. It's good writing. I like it. I like it a lot. So.
Woo, wow, no segue. Statement. You just like.
I'm sorry. I was trying not to sneeze again.
Oh.
I was going to say, two different kind of presidency takes, but you have no feud between them.
I knew you were going to go to the feud, I thought. Yeah, okay.
So Feud is the newest show by Ryan. And I've forgotten
Seacrest?
His name. No.
Murphy,
yes. Ah. Who did American Horror Story.
Thanks, Tiffles.
You're welcome.
So glad to have you back from Canada. Blame Canada.
Who does American Horror Story. And this is apparently an anthology series, and they're going to center on a different feud each season.
Hmm.
So the feud they're centering on this season is Bette Davis and Joan Crawford. Particularly while they were filming Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, which is one of my favorite films. So I've watched the first episode. Jessica Lange plays Joan Crawford, and Susan Sarandon plays Bette Davis. And I have to say, Susan Sarandon is very well cast. She's got Bette Davis down pretty good. Jessica Lange is a very good actress. She doesn't quite look the Joan Crawford part, which kind of throws me. I keep thinking, oh, it's Jessica Lange in a black wig.
Yeah. That's always hard when that...
Yeah. But other than that, it's very well acted. It's very well written. And I'm really enjoying the fashion. Since Mad Men is no longer on the air, I'm getting my 50s fashion. I know. I'm trying not to go back and rewatch something I've already watched twice in its entirety. But I loved my Mad Men. God, I loved my Mad Men.
My liver didn't like it because I would drink more.
And smoking.
Yeah.
Drink and smoke the whole time.
So what channel is that on?
This is an FX production.
Very cool.
You can see the first episode for free if you don't have FX. I watched it on my Kindle. And then we're actually getting cable this week, so...
Oh.
I will continue to watch this.
Party at Carol's house.
I know.
Stop taping the cable cord back. Yeah, here we go. All right.
So I'm actually enjoying this. You know, if anything, for the mid-century fashion looks. So
awesome. So you loved it so far?
Loved it so far. Well,
have you gotten to watch the second season?
No, I can't wait though.
Oh, okay.
So don't spoil too much of it, but
I won't actually spoil it all. But it's basically, and Tiffany watched it too. But it's a Netflix series, so this is season two, and it's created by Judd Apatow and his band of crazy people who make great things. But it's Mickey and Gus are back up to their shitty behavior, and it is hysterical and a little bit tender and fun at times too. So, but
is Judd Apatow's daughter in it again as the actress that was on that TV show the first season that he was tutoring her?
Yeah, she's back, and I'm halfway through. This is 12 episodes, season two.
Is it really?
I'm six.
The first season was like really
10.
Short.
Yeah, it was 9 or 10. But yeah, this one's 12. So I've gotten through season 6 and around episode 5 of the season, she's back. And,
oh, okay.
I'll just say that her parents make an appearance, and the actors who play them, spot on, and one of them's a big surprise. I was not expecting to see
this
person.
Oh, really? Now I'm even more intrigued.
And it's somebody who really doesn't work with Judd Apatow, so I'm not sure what he called in to do that, but it was pretty cool. Yeah. So, but check it out. You can binge watch it. This isn't on the list, but for those of you, this week, St. Patrick's Day also sees the release of Iron Fist on Netflix. So
yes.
If you love the Marvel TV shows, this is the last part kind of the Defenders. So you want to
catch
the solo series. So.
Unlike some of the other series, there seems to be a lot more guff coming up about this. So,
The guff started because the main character is a white guy and he's into martial arts. And there's so much... assumed whitewashing, but the character is white.
He started as a white guy who went to, sort of like Doctor Strange, goes to the East
and learn stuff. So yep. I don't know how they could have rewritten the entire part.
Yeah. I think that, you know, and then I heard some commentators talking about, well, he's so short and small, it would be like a hobbit version of Iron Fist. And it's
he
like,
does have the curly hair too. So
yeah. But it's like, let's give it a chance before we do that. I mean, people said that they didn't like Luke Cage, and it's like, it's not always, the nice thing is the Marvel stories are not formulaic, and if they were, we wouldn't like them. So be okay with the variety. You okay?
Yeah, I thought my phone was ringing.
Oh, okay.
See, I'm not the only one getting stuff.
I will say, too, the height thing. It's like, you know, so many actors like Tom Cruise and Dustin Hoffman, these great, it doesn't matter. I mean, they can pluff a role. They make the other actors walk through trenches, so it'll work out. They really do. Used to do that for, I don't know if they still do for Tom Cruise, if he still has that
lifts in his A-list shoes. Stuff,
but yeah. It's...
And, like, for real, whatever the premise is that's for real of this is a lot different than what I thought it was. I thought it was a porn.
You wouldn't want this Iron Fist. That's all I
can say. Kyle, your 2-year-old cannot listen to this episode.
That's right.
Just gonna point that out.
So it's gonna be a porn now.
Just saying, this is better than
on
what
our 21st
I
birthday. You can say you might want to listen to that thing in the archives.
I don't know, man.
Speaking of Netflix, we did have some good news today, although it was rather unfortunate that Netflix has decided to go ahead and fund season 2 of Lemony Snicket's.
Yes,
a series of unfortunate events. Now you've watched it all.
I have.
We're pretty far.
Matt and I have watched the first 6 episodes, and each story is a 2-episode arc. It appears. So we've gotten through the first 3 stories. I will say that the 3rd story was not necessarily my favorite.
There's 12 books,
but I nevertheless enjoyed watching it. It's it's very watchable material.
Yeah.
And I do think that the thing that kind of freaks me out is I forgot that the young girl who plays the lead is actually Kara, the young Kara from Supergirl. So I knew she looked familiar, and in my head I thought she looked a lot like the girl who played the young girl in the movie Lemony Snicket's series.
Of they do actually look very
similar. And
they
look very similar. So I was like, how did she do the timey-wimey age thing? Because she should probably be an adult now.
She is. She was in The Magnificent Seven.
I know. So I was like, but then I realized where I recognized her from, and it was from Supergirl.
What freaks me out about that series is the baby. Sunny just looks really bizarre. Because she's all CGI, because she eats things.
Yeah.
But that's a really creepy CGI baby.
You know what the baby reminds me of? The sun in Teletubbies. The actual sun, S-U-N.
Oh, my God.
Anyway. But speaking of that, why don't we go right to Red Oaks with a very crunchy little segue. I have no good transition on that one.
So, I watched the 2nd season of Red Oaks, which is on Amazon, and I talked about it before, but basically it follows David, who is an assistant tennis pro at a country club. It's an aspiring filmmaker, and it takes place in the 80s, and it features Paul Reiser as kind of hedge fund guy. So it's a little bit of Wall Street and that type of thing, but I'm continuing to really enjoy the show. You really kind of get to know the people that David works with at the country club and some of the guests at the country club, and I think it's definitely a much different vibe than Stranger Things. I mean, there's no fantasy element of it. It's a straightforward people at a country club type thing. And for those that know me, know I love shit like that. So it's really just a sweet, it's a sweet show, and it will wrap up next season. So
I think you'd like Feud.
Yeah. Okay. You recommended Westworld, and then you ended up being totally correct on that one.
Yeah,
so
I think you'd
I'll
like
take your recommendation.
Not so much American Horror Story, but this one is actually, I think you'd like
Food. I saw the first season of American Horror Story. I get, as we know from 2 weeks ago, way too freaked out.
Yeah.
Way too easily
freaked out.
So, I do not need to be watching American Horror Story.
Yes.
Nor do you need to be watching The Walking Dead.
There you go.
I delivered that.
Feel free to jump in at any point, because obviously we don't give you an opportunity to talk. We just talk right around.
And he's probably been writing for the last 2 years and going, I'm so behind on every TV show except Mad Men.
Just this weekend, I introduced my wife to Princess Bride, and my
fantastic.
My daughter did not like the rat in the marshes. Or
R-U-S's, yeah.
R-O-U-S's. Okay, so Walking Dead, Carol is back, yay.
Hi, Carol.
Yes, she's back again.
So war is starting to brew amongst the Hilltop and the Saviors and Alexandria and all the other little factions of strange people who are still alive in this universe. And this week, Carol found out that, you know, Negan had beat Glenn and Abraham to death with a baseball bat. And
she didn't know pissed. That.
No, she did not.
She didn't people see that episode?
No, she was not there.
Oh.
She didn't see the episode, yeah. She didn't have a TV, you know. There's no electricity.
But did she take a shower? Because that's what Tiffany is concerned about.
Yes.
Has she
showered recently?
She has showered recently.
Okay, then all right. Good.
Daryl hasn't, but she has.
That guy was born greasy.
Yeah, I think he was. I think he just, you know, he gets out of the shower and just a layer of grease goes whoosh all over him.
It's kind of like Pig Pen. The dirt just resettles.
Yeah. So this week she did find out that Negan killed two of her friends, and now she's pissed.
Oh, boy. Uh-oh. Don't piss off Carol.
Yeah.
Or you.
Yeah. And then, of course, the Saviors also killed one of the other characters that was part of the kingdom, Benjamin, who probably had the biggest target on his body. He might as well just called himself Target, because it was so obvious this kid was going to die. So, which pissed off Morgan. So now you have Morgan and Carol, two very dangerous characters, very pissed off at the Saviors. So, look out, Negan.
Mm-hmm.
And we're gearing up to the end of the season, so I'm sure here something in a couple huge. Of episodes they'll just end with a cliffhanger of everybody getting together and saying, yeah, let's go fight, and then we wait half a year
till Halloween.
Yep.
That's how they roll.
Maybe we should travel to the other side, to the Brit Box.
Right. So, it's actually not a TV show, right. But...
that was nice.
I was reading, there's a subscription service that I was unaware of that is available right now on...
Is it available?
It's available now on all Apple devices. Anything not Apple, but basically for $6.99 a month, you get advertisement-free access to all shows that are on ITV, BBC, and I forget what the other big network is over in Britain.
I don't need to sleep.
Yeah. So.
Do you get it live? Like BBC?
No, but it's like Netflix for British shows. But like, it has everything.
$6.99 a month? Because I looked at something and it was like you had to like pick channels, and based on the channels is what you paid.
What the article I read said that it was a rate of $6.99 a month. Oh,
that's
whatever.
Awesome.
But yeah, advertisement free.
Wow.
So if you're an Anglophile, like most of us are,
mm-hmm. There you go.
Get it.
Do you like British television? When you were in China for the 10 years, and if you don't know what we're talking about, go back to episode 133. Kyle, when you're in China for 10 years, other than watching sports at 2 a.m. on your iPad, what kind of shows did you watch in China?
So I didn't watch anything live because I didn't have TV, but I would get the DVDs, the underground DVDs, and watch the like Vampire Diaries, and thank goodness that's over. And
did you watch the end of it?
I did.
Yeah, I stopped watching like a couple years ago, but I read what happened, and I'm like, I really liked him.
Yeah. Spoiler.
I just said him.
Yeah. Well, that gives you a 50% chance. But anyway.
Yeah, but I watched very little. So that's, I'm a little out of the culture. I'm gonna getting back in.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing about being right American. You have to like watch tons of TV or else you're just like, what? Life? I don't know. So, but that brings us to the end of our TV shows. Let's launch right into movie conversations. Carol, last week you gave us a book review on The Girl with All the Gifts, and I understand that now you've gone and watched the movie.
I
so
did.
Answer that age-old question.
Which
is the movie better than the book, or vice versa?
No, the book was much better. It's not a bad film. It's obviously low budget. It's a British film. It's a British book. It's not, like I said, it's not a bad film. the budgetary constraints are evident. It's zombies, so it's pretty easy to do zombies on the cheap, but some of the other stuff around them was just very kind of like, oh, that's not well done. But my main problem with it is the little girl who plays the lead, Melanie, she's a good actress, but she's not good enough to carry an entire film, and she was supposed to carry this entire film.
That's a really hard thing to transition hard. YA, because...
Yeah, because she's only like 9 or 10, and it's a lot to put on a kid, particularly when you're acting opposite Glenn Close.
So
that's where it kind of faltered a little bit. I recommend it. I recommend the book much more because the book was really excellent, and I was not expecting the book to be as good as it is because it's zombies, and what can you do with them?
Yeah, I think that's why Stranger Things works, because just like Goonies, it's an ensemble cast, so not one particular kid is having to carry everything.
Yeah.
I mean, and let's face it, 11 didn't have to say much to carry her part. She just had to look weird. Yeah. So,
whereas I recommend it, I don't think it's something you, unless you're really interested in the zombie genre, you don't have to really seek it out.
Okay.
Seek out the book, though. It's really good.
So, in other news, Edward J. Olmos almost confirms. I know. EJO. Odama.
Odama
says... He's coming back to Blade Runner 2049. Hopefully we don't wait until 2049 to make it, because he might not.
No. So. Wow. Downer.
I know, but I get scared because that's one that would hurt me.
That would hurt a lot. That would hurt me. I'm really happy to hear this. I'm kind of eager to see Blade Runner 2049. Not necessarily because Blade Runner needed a sequel, but because the director is really good. And
yeah,
I'm not... totally horrified that, what's his name?
Gosling,
yeah, is Ryan the Gosling, star. Yeah. But Harrison Ford is back, and with Edward James almost back, I'm kind of...
So at least they're bringing people back. Like, right. I read about the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo sequel.
Yeah.
Not being directed by David Fincher, not going to have Rooney Mara anymore, or Daniel Craig. And I'm like,
wow.
So what's the point? Yeah.
I never saw a real point for that movie anyway, because the Swedish films were so good.
I loved that David Fincher film.
That's
like, it was just too good.
Well, it's David Fincher, and you love David Fincher. But yeah, I'm really interested to see Blade Runner 2049. It's not directed by Ridley Scott. It's directed by Dennis, I don't want to butcher his last name, who just directed The Arrival. And who is in talks to direct Dune?
Whoa.
So,
I would be really interested to see Dune in this day and age. I realize Dune is a classic for a lot of people, but it's the bad classic. But I really think that it would be, given the potentiality of
graphics. I have to say, I actually like the David Lynch film.
I'm not saying I don't like it, but
Lynch.
I really...
Yeah, I do.
But it doesn't mean that you like all the CGI or what they attempt to do.
No. But my problem with Dune is that I always thought The Lord of the Rings was unfilmable, but then Peter Jackson kind of proved me wrong, although he, you know, took the bare bones of what the book was. Dune is almost completely unfilmable because it is just such a
dense
world.
Is that James Spader in it?
No.
Oh. Yeah, but Alicia Witt was in it.
Was in it, when Sting. She was a very little girl. Sting. Yeah. Now, they did do a mini-series on Syphy that had James McAvoy in it.
About syphilis?
No. Oh. Sci-fi. Sorry. But I'm interested to see what they can do with it. I just don't think the book is really all that filmable, because... When we went and saw the David Lynch version, they handed us a glossary as we walked into the movie theater so we would know what the fuck the characters were talking about. And we had all read the book, so it was like, yeah, this is pointless. We know what they're talking about. But normal people would be like, okay, what was that? Looking at the sheet going, okay, oh, okay, the guild. Now we know what they're talking about.
Maybe let's do like a Mad Max type of version of it, where it's just freaking its own thing, and they take all the big words out of it.
So... But yeah, so we'll see if that actually comes to pass. There's still negotiation of trying to get the another movie done.
Mm.
So I know we have another movie listed on here, but that's actually more of an event. Okay. So I'm gonna pause for just a minute and talk about four upcoming events or past events that we can talk about, if that's all right with everybody.
No.
First of all, this past Sunday we were at Charlotte Comic Con. I'm ignoring you, Tiffles, and just moving on. Starnslord and I were there along with Davey Beauchamp, and we were representing the Geek Gala. I'm happy to say that in spite of the snow, it was reported that we had record numbers for the March event. And I would say that after a slow hour or so start, we really did have quite a good crowd that came through. We were there giving away lots of swag for Kong
Skull Island.
And it was a great opportunity to go out and meet folks. We also had a couple people pick up Zillas, and that went over really well. But the exciting thing is that this Friday night, we're going to be at Mug's Coffee for St. Patty's Day. We're going to be there from 5:30 until 10. Normally we would stay till 11, but we're St. Patrick's Day can sometimes inspire a lot of extra drinking. We think that maybe we want you off the roads before 11, or if you're going to go drink somewhere else, we want you to get there before 11. So we are going to end at 10, but the reason why I tell you this is because if you're interested in seeing an advanced screening of Ghost in the Shell,
we'll talk later.
Carol might be there.
Yes.
All right. We are going to be giving out passes for that, as well as some interesting swag with a member of the movie company. So make sure you come out to Mugs Park Road so that you can get some of that stuff. If you're looking for other things to do, I do want to mention two more events. Number one is Abari, our favorite arcade bar place, is having an event on March 25th during the day to celebrate their one-year anniversary. And we, the Guardians of the Geekery, the Charlotte Geeks, the Geek Gala, and we Geek Girls will be sharing one tent.
Boy, it's going to be crowded.
Along with a little Con Carolina bookmark, I think.
Yeah.
To promote some different things. So make sure you come out there, bring your quarters, go and play some classic video games. Going to be lots of cool people there, some good food trucks. And, you know, it's right next to Joe's Joe's, so you can get some homemade donuts as well. And I probably will, even though I shouldn't. So make sure you come out and hang with us for that day. It's also the same weekend as Mad Monster Party and as Mace West. So if you're looking for gaming or horror, we have those opportunities for you as well. So make sure you check those out. And then the final thing that I want to talk about is Drew Aronica, who's a member of Robot Johnson. Yeah. And we love Robot Johnson quite much. He is actually doing a premiere of his movie. It's
Ambition.
It's called Ambition, but I asked him to give us a little short blurb, so stop.
Stop what?
So I'm going to tell you exactly what he told me to say. Come out and see Between Jobs Productions' first short film, Ambition, a dark comedy that explores a long-term friendship and what happens when their lives' paths begin to diverge. It's starring Drew Aronica and John Chenoweth from Montfrere. Showing on Sunday, April 2nd at 7 p.m. at Studio 1212. Again, that is April 2nd, 7 p.m., Studio 1212. And the movie, again, is called Ambitions. So make sure you check that out. Support some friends of ours. We may have an event going out and seeing that. But all good things to check out and do here locally in the Charlotte area.
And also, Women Playing Hamlet is still performing until
still
March 25th.
Still going on! So good. And so if you don't know what we're talking about, go check out our Away Team episode on that. 8 minutes full of fun. So,
actors.
Speaking about things that make us furiously happy, Carol?
Yes. I want to read this, so yeah, I'm interested to
hear. Furiously Happy is the second book by Jenny Lawson, who is the blogstress, if you've ever read her blog. And she wrote a previous book called Let's Just Pretend This Didn't Happen. Both books are kind of memoirs. Jenny deals with a lot of psychological issues. And a lot of, well, she'll describe them as mental illnesses in her book. But she deals with them with a lot of humor, a lot of just kind of, this is my life, here it is. and her long-suffering husband, Vincent. I recommend this book highly. I love her writing. I think she's hysterical. I think she's really great. I would love to see her write some fiction because I'd hate to see her get pigeonholed as that chick who always writes about her mental illnesses. But at the same token, I highly recommend the book because it's just, it is furiously happy. And it's got a stuffed taxidermied raccoon on the cover that is just smiling and reaching towards you. And she's got a thing for stuffed dead animals. So her first book had a little stuffed mouse on it, dressed in Renaissance garb. So that's Jenny Lawson, Furiously Happy. Read it. It's really good.
Well, I also read a book this week.
You can read?
I know. Gasp from the crowd. So I actually had ordered this online. I had seen somebody else talk about it and was curious. It's called Troublemaker. It is a work of nonfiction also by Leah Remini. And I picked it up last night off of the dresser and I read the whole thing in one night. So not a slow read at all. It's a pretty fast read. So Leah Remini, probably best known for being Carrie on King of Queens. But she was also recently in the press because she left the Church of Scientology after being in it for almost 30 years. She was what they would consider a second generation Scientologist because her mom was the one that kind of started in that and brought her young daughters in there. So they weren't born into it, but they came to it at a pretty young age. And, you know, there was a lot of controversy when she left back in 2013. So this is what I'll say. It's written by Leah Remini with someone. You can definitely tell that Leah wrote some of it. And one of the things that I did find slightly annoying, but it could be because I read it all in one night, was the fact that it does go back and re-explain certain things, like what an SP means, which is a suppressed person. It will actually recap the whole thing in the second or third chapter. And I think most readers these days, if they got it in the first or second chapter, other than maybe doing the, hey, it's a suppressed person, SP, and then going on, you don't have to go back and redo the whole thing. But I think the way that she may have told it was she, in interviews to this ghostwriter, and so therefore may have recapped it in case they didn't, they cut it out somewhere else. So first of all, I think the first thing you should know is that the foreword, before you even get started, she's like, let me tell you all the things that I've done wrong in my life, because the Church of Scientology is going to try to discredit me. So let me just tell you right now, I chased a married man who was 19 years older than me. He was a cheater as well. You know, I stole things, I've lied, I've sworn, I've drunk, you know, and so, you know, my mom is a self-proclaimed slut and, you know, all these things. So she's like, there, if there's anything else that we need to know, let me know. The interesting thing is she was pretty close to or she had a lot of encounters with Tom Cruise when she got success with King of Queens, and gave a very interesting insight into what it was like to be around him. She never claimed to be a close friend of his, but she got invited to things, and the way the Church of Scientology made it out was basically, if you're invited, you need to go. So that was kind of interesting. Of course, she touched a little bit on her Dancing with the Stars days, which is always of interest to me, but overall, it really was talking about her life as far as Church of Scientology went. So it was really an insider's view of that, you know, and just talking about the discrediting and some of the things that went on. There is some scandal in there. Definitely, if that's what you're looking for, you can see little bits of that. Also, there's some name dropping in there because she knows some pretty cool people like Jennifer Lopez and Mark Anthony and you know, Holly Robinson, Pete, and stuff like that. And those were her people. Those were her friends that she hung out with. So you get to hear about that. But a lot of it is really about the religion and not just a celebrity novel, you know, fiction autobiography kind of thing. So coming from a very religious family myself, I found that part really interesting. And she talks a lot about the programming that Scientology does. So if you're intrigued by that at all, It is a fast read. I did find that towards the end, as she was trying to get a little more philosophical, I was, maybe because I'd been reading it for 3 hours straight, I was kind of done. I nevertheless did find myself crying towards the end at a certain part. So definitely touching. So is it the most skillfully written piece of work ever? Probably not. But was it a fascinating read? Yeah, I would probably give it a B minus. So worth reading. Not something that I find myself that I'll be rereading again and again, but I don't feel like I wasted my time reading it. So definitely check that out. Cool. So speaking of things that we've checked out, you went and saw that new horror shop store.
Yeah, there's a new horror shop in Fort Mill called Creature's Crypt.
Right up your alley.
Yeah,
go check that out.
It's near Carowinds. It's a very small store. If you're looking for collectibles, they have a lot there. If you're looking for just standard horror merchandise, it's...
not there yet.
It's not quite there yet, but they've only been open for 1 week. So give them a little chance to get their stock up. They sell a lot of Archie McPhee stuff, a lot of Sourpuss stuff for those of us who like the rockabilly. And they do have a lot. They make masks on the premises, and if you look, there's a window where you can actually watch their mask makers make the horror masks. And they sell a lot of fairly high-end collectibles. I was lusting after, you know, in the 70s you had those plastic... horror or plastic Halloween costumes where you just got the little stupid thing that you put over your clothes and then the mask where you always got your tongue stuck in the little slit. Prior to the 70s, in the 50s and the 60s, they actually had door costumes, like the same thing, only the masks were huge and you'd hang them on your front door, and they had a whole selection of these, and I was like, oh my god.
Oh, those are cool.
Yeah. So, I didn't even look at the price because I was like, I can't afford any of them. I know I can't because they're in perfect condition. But yeah, it's a really nifty little store. They need to work on their stock a little bit, but it's actually pretty. It's pretty cool place, and it's.
And when you were talking about the rockabilly stuff, what kind of stuff did they have?
Sourpuss is a company that sells purses and some dresses and a lot of home stuff, salt and pepper shakers and dishes, and mugs. And they'll do, you know, kind of the, anyone who knows my purses, they've got skulls on them, they've got like tattooed type things on them. And it's that type of thing. They have some tiki mugs there as well. But it's just a cool little store.
Cool.
I recommend it.
Well, that kind of wraps up a lot of the information that we have for the night. I did want to talk a little bit about a historic landmark that we reached last week, which was the 20th anniversary of the TV series Buffy the Vampire Slayer, not to be confused with the movie.
Is it the 20th or the 30th?
20th.
That's
okay. 20th. We're not that old yet.
I was going to say, I don't know how old it was.
So did you watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer ever?
I did.
Yay! What kind of topic can you talk about? So, I thought maybe we could talk about, I had posted a little bit on the Charlotte Geeks talking about favorite characters, favorite episodes, things that we didn't like about the series, etc. And I thought tonight might be a fun time to just talk a little bit about that. So, Kyle, I'm going to give you the floor.
I watched it for Buffy. That was about college time frame, so. It's been a while, though.
Yeah, I really want that chocolate poster that they used to have in their dorm room because I remember having that in high school. Like, not me, but another girl in the dorm having one and being like, I remember those posters hanging around and stuff like that. But so did you watch Angel as well or just the Buffy series?
I actually watched some Angel afterwards as well. And then I disappeared into China, so.
I chased you away into China. Wow. Sure.
Damn you, Spike.
What about you?
I've watched both series beginning to end. What I like about both series is they don't... where they can have very huge dramatic episodes and very touching episodes, like The Body where Buffy's mother dies, or the episode where Tara is killed. they don't tend to take themselves too seriously. There's a lightheartedness to them that makes you very... And the Scooby gang is usually very funny. And that's Joss Whedon. I mean, you'll laugh at his characters and then they'll kill them on you.
yeah. I think they were very self-aware. Yeah. And I think that was something refreshing. Because sometimes sci-fi got to be these sweeping melodramas or all action.
Yeah.
And or all supernatural. And then to have somebody come in and do some kick-ass moves and be hilarious was something kind of new and refreshing. I find the fashion a little hard to watch when I go back, especially the high water flared jeans with the boots, the clunky boots, because we thought that was so cool.
It was.
It'll come back.
Yeah, it will come back.
Everything comes back.
But,
everything
and the pale
back.
Nail polish, the pale blues, the pale greens.
Well, that's already
like that.
Coming back.
But that's already coming back. But it was that parts of that were a little bit tough, but I still like they were classic tropes of high school, you know, the jock, the kid who wanted to be popular and wanted to get the girl who had the other girl in love with him and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And interesting to see how they arc. I still think, well, who was one of your favorite bad guys from Buffy?
I love Spike, but he's just, yeah, I just like the whole relationship. But I really like the, I'd seen the movie in the theater. And so when I heard about the TV show, I was like, I'm good.
Yeah.
And,
the
and
movie's
so,
not all
yeah,
that great.
So honestly, I played catch up kind of big time. And I was like, wow, Sarah Michelle Gellar, yes, I'm right with you. this is the reason to watch the show for me. But
with Anthony Michael Head.
There were other characters?
yeah, apparently. Willow or something? But I actually, at HeroesCon, I was just chatting with this artist and we hung out one weekend when HeroesCon was here in town. And he just casually mentioned to me, oh, yeah, you can have my comic. And it was the Buffy the Vampire series. And it kind of continued the series. So they did a season 8, season 9. And then they continued Angel as well, which I think was season 6.
6, yeah.
And then they did Angel and Faith. But he's George Gentry. And usually they pop around a lot of artists. But he actually got to illustrate a lot of that stuff for Dark Horse. And then IDW picked them up. But so that was kind of my thing where it was like, oh, wow. And I thought it was just cool that they kind of kept going with the comic book. And they didn't have any of those budget limitations. Because I think that's the thing back then. Special effects weren't too hot, and you could tell that you'd spend all your budget on a really great episode, and then the next one it was like, oh, they can't afford blood this episode because they spent it all. But all right, yeah. So, but no, I thought it was really fun. Yeah.
So, Tiffles, did you watch Buffy at all?
I did.
Yeah.
Yes,
I was.
Yay!
A big Buffy fan.
Everybody plays.
Yeah. Woo. So I was predictably a huge fan of Angel, of David Boreanaz.
Oh,
I mean,
boy.
Like I literally cried the day he married his wife in real life. Like, that's how into him I was.
Wow.
And
pre-Henry Cavill then. Yeah.
Pre-Henry Cavill. Henry Cavill was just a babe at that point. But the show, like, I think that the characters were like 2 years older than me. A lot of what happened on the show, like a lot of the symbolism and metaphors, like I really related to at the time. So I really liked the show. My favorite bad guy was the mayor.
Yes.
I thought he was fantastic. I hated Faith. Like, she got on my nerves big time.
I will say Faith got on my nerves as well.
Almost as much as Buffy's sister.
Oh, God. Sister, yeah. Non-sister,
Dawn.
Yeah.
Dawn. But I understood the sort of place she took in the story, you know. But, I loved Buffy. I thought it was a great show. And I liked Angel as well, but it got, like, very dark. I liked Wes better on Buffy as, like, sort of lighthearted comedy relief.
Yeah.
Then
Although
he got
I
super,
really
like, dark on Angel.
Yeah, I really liked his story arc, though, through the two shows.
Yeah.
And Cordelia's, too.
Yeah.
I mean, well,
except
she
that she
that
slept with
place.
Angel, that bitch.
Yeah, well, she also slept with Angel's son, which was even worse.
Oh, whatever, because he was annoying, too.
That's
what she said. See, that was the character in Angel I couldn't stand. I could not stand Connor.
Could not stand him.
And then he grew up and went on Mad Men, and for like the first two seasons of Mad Men, I was like, I can't stand you, Pete, because you're Connor.
And the poor guy had to shave his like.
Yeah, he had to do the balding thing later on in Mad Men, which he pulled off very well.
By the way, married to Alexis Bledel in real life, Rory from Gilmore Girls.
Yeah. I love The Gentlemen, which only show up in one episode, which is Hush, which is probably the best Buffy episode, I think it's.
That was good. Yeah. I like the ventriloquist dummy, too. That.
Oh, God.
That it was so creepy, but it was. I just love the whole con of the thing. And
yeah, it's been interesting when you go back and watch, like, past episodes, where you catch past episodes on TV and stuff, and forget things like John Ritter was in an episode and stuff like that. That's what kind of. But, you know, they had such a clever way of handling stuff, and again, that self-awareness. I mean, one of my favorite scenes is, you know, little snippets, but like when Willow's sitting on the bed and she's talking about how she's not a very good witch and she can't even get Amy to turn back. She should be able to just say this and she should just turn back. And what she doesn't realize is Amy actually did turn back, but because she said, but it's never going to work. And then all of a sudden she, you know, just turns back into the mouse again. It was like that whole second where she almost was there. I mean, to get that actress to come back to do that little scene was just hilarious. And the same thing with, you know, Cordelia when she comes to stay with Angel in the Angel series. And she's like, do you have moose? She's like, who am I talking to? Of course you have moose. I was just such a, yeah. It was a great thing. I did like Angel better for a while, but then it kind of went to the weird place. Although I did like Fred, the character Fred.
I do like the character of Fred. I love the one-off episodes that are just bizarre. I love the musical episode of Buffy. I love the Angel as a Puppet episode of Angel, because that was just hilarious.
Yes.
I love the episode where Spike and Angel go to Rome. They're like a buddy duo.
Yes.
Yeah. I remember. I loved that episode.
Yeah, and I loved when Xander and Spike had to live together for a while. And Anya was just hilarious. Again, that was just a good comic foil.
Bunny Rabbits.
Oh, that was a good episode. When they were in the frat house and they were all having to deal with their fears. That was kind of cool. So, yeah, I really am glad that there was something like Buffy around, because I think it spawned so many other great opportunities for people. And, you know, for once, Joss Whedon's things didn't all get canceled. So.
Yeah, and I also like that he pushed boundaries. He really, you know, when they were going to refuse to show the Willow and Tara kiss, he threatened to quit.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, he pushed the boundaries with the show. I wish he had given, you know, they could have given him more time with Firefly, because I do love Firefly, but.
Yeah. But I,
Not so much Dollhouse. Sorry, Joss.
Yeah, not my fave. But nevertheless, even his worst is better than some people's best.
That's true.
So, thankful for Joss Whedon, and definitely thankful for Buffy, so. On that note,
we say,
yep.
Can you do that thing that you do
well?
Do
that thing that I do, I'm pushing.
I don't know about well, but.
Thank you for listening to Guardians of the Geekery. For more
it looks
information,
to kill,
the
mic will fall over again. You know what we're talking about? Go listen to episode 133, where Kyle actually talks. Don't forget to check out Kyle. Birthright. J. Kyle McNeil. Sorry, Chris, I'm talking over your shit again.
We always talk over Chris.
Yeah, Chris.
We used to be so good about not talking over Chris.
I don't
what
remember.
What was that?
That
like
was
episode
one day.
Three or four.
Oh, before he was doing it?
Before we actually had it.